Hello, this is Nancy Pippin with the Pantograph for Friday, June 15th, 2018. We will begin today's reading with the front page, where we first see a picture of passengers lining up for a flight on the Liberty Aviation Museum Ford Trimotor Aircraft Thursday at Central Illinois Regional Airport, Bloomington. Flights are scheduled through Sunday and sponsored by the Experimental Aircraft Association and local businesses. A 90-year-old plane offers riders unique view of B&N. And we also have a picture of Bill Thacker, a Chenoa pilot who finds the controls in a 1928 Ford trimotor aircraft a little different from the commercial jets he has flown for United Airlines. He's one of a handful of pilots who flew the plane around the country. It's in Bloomington Normal this weekend. So Bill Stent's 82nd birthday was one for the books. "The fact that the aircraft is even older than I am impressed me," he said with a smile after seeing Bloomington Normal from above Thursday aboard a 1928 Ford Trimotor. "It's way up there in terms of his birthday presents. On top." Stents and his wife Janet were among the first people in Bloomington Normal to ride the historic plane flying out of Central Illinois Regional Airport. Thanks to the local chapter of enthusiasts in Experimental Aircraft Association. Rides are $75 for adults, $50 for those under 17, and free for those 2 years old and younger, and available from 9 to 5 p.m. Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, from the former terminal next door to the main CIRA campus. Each ride lasts about 10 minutes and covers most of the Twin City from the airport to downtown Bloomington, to the Illinois State University campus, to Heartland Community Campus, to Eastland Mall, and back. Each of the craft's 10 seats is next to a small plastic window. He's interested in antique-type things and kept expressing the desire to go on this ride, so I decided to surprise him and actually buy the tickets, said Janet Strintz. "I loved not flying so high. You got to see the whole city, and you could pick out ISU and Illinois Wesleyan University and all the different places. I got a kick out of it. It was a real pleasure." The Strintzes both said they felt safe in the plane, which is inspected and tested before and after every flight. Riders are required to sign a waiver and hear a safety presentation before boarding. Chenoa pilot Bill Thacker, a member of EAA Chapter 129, which is headquartered at the airport, said he's thrilled to fly the plane all weekend, reminding residents of the, quote, golden age of aviation, and spreading his joy of flying to youth who could become the next generation of pilots. "What they're going to see, to hear, to feel, to experience, to smell is exactly what would have happened in 1929," he said Thursday. "We're going to be able to see me do my work because there's no cockpit door on this airplane. We can just look right in there and see me start the engines." Chapter 129 was awarded a visit from the aircraft, which is on lease to the National EAA from Liberty Aviation Museum in Port Clinton, Ohio. The craft served transcontinental air transport and as a sightseeing vehicle before falling into disrepair and undergoing restoration. It bears markings reflecting all of those stops, as well as the city of Wichita, Kansas. It's a very faithful restoration. It has some upgrades on it to bring it to the 21st century, some safety things like we put in a better braking system, said Thacker, and as far as the accoutrements, as far as what it looks like on the insides, this is exactly like what it looked like back then. The visit is raising money for Young Eagles, an EAA program that introduces kids from 8 to 17 to planes. Thacker noted Synergy Flight Center, another CIRA tenant, is a sponsor and will pay for fuel for the plane. Everybody that touches the plane is a volunteer, he said last week. It makes a little money for the chapter and a little for our national EAA, but our primary mission is to get aviation up close and personal to people. Now, the second page where this article has continued, there is a picture of the airplane from the passenger's perspective, and it's a row straight down the middle with single seats on either side. They have rounded tops to them and a little pouch for information, and you see a whole two rows of folks taking pictures of the open cockpit where you can see the pilot and his navigator on either side. I also note that the paneling in the plane is wood, and there are lovely curtains of a heavy fabric that would darken them. And remember that it was mentioned the plane, the windows are made out of plastic. So if you go, what you will see is a 1928 Ford trimotor plane flight. When is from 9 to 5 p.m. Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And where is the former terminal at Central Illinois Regional Airport? Your cost would be $75 for adults, $50 for those under 17, and free for those 2 years old or younger. And this is again sponsored by the Experimental Aircraft EAA Chapter 129, Bloomington Normal Synergy Flight Center. Our next article is entitled Corn in Region Growing Quickly. Area crops in good condition after the rain. Scotty May has been farming in the Wapapella area for more than three decades, but seems to find something new all of the time. Each year, he plants a patch of sweet corn before hitting the fields to plant corn and soybeans. As I was walking past, I noticed the tassels starting to pop, Tuesday, he said. It took only 48 days from planting. I've never seen corn grow this fast in my life. I've been farming for 30-plus years, and I don't believe I have ever witnessed corn grow as rapid as this year, especially after such a cold, dry start. It looks like we'll have corn on the cob in early July. Farmers throughout central Illinois reported similar stories this week after widespread showers and thunderstorms dumped several inches of rain on the region in the past week. It's amazing as to how we can go from record cold April to the second warmest May and see how quickly Illinois corn can grow, said May. We've amassed close to a record heat units in May and were blessed with recent rains to send this crop into rapid growth. Bruce Thomas, another Wapapella area farmer growing corn and soybeans, took a picture of his five-year-old daughter, Breely, and Breely on June 6th standing in front of the corn and in front of a field of corn, and that matched her height at that time. Well, a week later, another picture in the same spot showed the corn had grown to twice her size, and Breely is pictured on the right of this, in the second page of this article, and she is cute as a button, and Briley Thomas, the 5-year-old daughter of Bruce and Sandra Thomas Wapapella, stands in front of the same cornfield a week before on the left and a week after it grew more than a foot on the right. And so what an amazing difference. We had over a foot of growth on corn in a week, and we are about 2 weeks ahead this year, Thomas said. Everything is growing great. The beans are blooming early, too. Most of McLean and DeWitt counties received between 2 to 4 inches of rain between Saturday and Tuesday, according to the National Weather Service in Lincoln. Areas directly to the south and north received more. No doubt the rain was needed, farmers said. According to the Illinois State Climatologist Office, portions of DeWitt and McLean counties, about 39%, were beginning to fall into an abnormally dry state. Following the rains, only 13% of the area is considered abnormally dry. We still have a ways to go, May said, but so far it's looking very good. According to the USDA, 95% of the planted corn has emerged, and 55% of the corn crop in Illinois is rated in good condition. Another 27% is rated excellent, while 15% is rated fair, but only 3% of the crop is rated poor or very poor. The USDA statistics also reveal that 90% of the planted soybeans were above ground. Of that, 62% is rated as being in good condition and 21% is rated as excellent. 15% of the crop is rated as being in fair condition, with only 3% rated as poor or very poor. While the rain certainly helped the crops, this week's predicted heat wave could do damage, experts said. Officials from NWS say temperatures are expected to rise to 90 degrees on Friday and 95 degrees on Saturday, Sunday, and Monday. After a 40% chance of rain early Friday, there's no rain in the forecast until Tuesday. In the bottom portion of today's pantograph, you'll see a beautiful red brick building. It's several stories tall, and it is 89 years old. This is a January 11, 2018 file photo of the State Farm's 89-year-old former headquarters in downtown Bloomington. And our article reads, State Farm Building Draws Diverse Interest. The former downtown headquarters is still for sale. The broker working to sell State Farm's shuttered downtown building said Thursday, interest remains strong and diverse, while adding that to his knowledge, the building has not been sold. Chad Freese, a Chicago-based executive vice president to CBRE, was named in April as the local contact for interested buyers, and he is continuing to market the building. I'm not going to give you an exact number, but we've been very pleased with the amount of interest that's been expressed from various parties, said Freese. At this point, the folks represent a wide range of future uses that I think includes different variations of apartments, hotels, office, hospitality, he said, adding to my knowledge, the building is still for sale. Bob Devereaux, a State Farm spokesman, also said Thursday that the building has not been sold. Portions of the building will not be parceled off. It will be sold only as a full building sale, said Freese, adding that this is going to take possibly a little bit of time. And while it's for sale, from his perspective, it's a big project, and we're at the early stages of a lot of folks try to begin their underwriting of what the market can support, what kind of income they could generate from the different types of uses, and they would develop in the assets and really get their heads around what Bloomington needs right now. The company announced April 9th it was selling the 200,000-square-foot, 13-story Art Deco building, the company's former headquarters at 112 East Washington Street. Freese sees the building as a great catalyst for the growth of downtown, and it is really up to the buying community to determine which path is the most compelling, he said. I think the final formula for what ends up being created is largely looking at what opportunity there is to bring a product to the market that doesn't presently exist. State Farm was declined to disclose an asking sale price. The building, which State Farm announced in January it was closing, has a market value of just under $9 million, according to the McLean County Assessor's Office. A sale price is not being quoted, said Freese. We've run a number of development performance models, and we don't want to bias the market with a viewpoint. We're optimistic, based on our analysis, that there is a good outcome to be had. So hopefully somebody is thinking the same thoughts and planning ahead. This looks like our last article from the front page, and it talks about the House GOP unveils bill for Dreamers. House Republicans unveiled a discussion draft of a sweeping immigration bill that includes a path to citizenship for young immigrants, $25 billion in border security, including advance funds for Donald Trump's wall with Mexico, and a provision aimed at addressing the crisis of family separations at the border. Presented to lawmakers Thursday, the measure sticks to Trump's immigration priorities while trying to join the party's wearing conservative and moderate factions on the issue that has divided the GOP for years. Passage is far from certain. Speaker Paul Ryan wants to hold a vote as soon as next week to put the issue to rest before the midterm election. He called it a, quote, very good compromise. Our members felt very, very passionate about having votes on policies they care about, and that's what we're doing, Ryan said earlier Thursday. So we're bringing legislation that's been carefully crafted and negotiated to the floor. We won't guarantee passage, however. And he goes on to say that there's a 293-page bill which represents the kind of ambitious overhaul of the immigration system Republicans have long considered but have been unable to turn into law. It shifts away from the nation's long-time preference for family immigration to a new system that prioritizes entire entry based on merit and skills. It beefs up border security, clamps down on illegal entries, and reinforces other immigration laws. To address widespread concern over the sharp rise of families being separated at the border, the measure proposes keeping children in detention with their parents, undoing two decade-old rules that limit the time minors can be held in custody. The White House sought the change. Trump has been supportive of the House GOP's approach, but the legislation faces opposition from Democrats. It is unlikely to be approved in the Senate. House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi of California called the legislation nothing more than a cruel codification of President Trump's anti-immigration agenda that abandons our nation's heritage as a beacon of hope and opportunity. Advocates for immigrants said the changes to family detentions were particularly severe. Carrie Talbot, the policy director at Immigration Hub, called it a, quote, wish list from top White House administration advisor Stephen Miller that would allow the Trump administration to jail children for long periods of time. GOP leaders have said they may take up the family detention issue separately if needed as the crisis of children being separated from their parents continues. Administration officials have said they need more money for detention beds to house the influx of immigrants. This influence is the result of the administration's zero-tolerance policy of stepped-up border enforcement. The main new element is a path to citizenship for as many as 1.8 million young people who have been living in the U.S. illegally since childhood. Many conservatives object to providing these immigrants with legal status, calling it amnesty, for those who broke the rules to get here. They are commonly referred to as Dreamers, based on never-passed proposals in Congress called the DREAM Act that would have provided similar protections for young immigrants. Republicans were reluctant to tackle the, quote, Dreamer issue this year, but it took on new urgency when moderate Republicans pushed it to the forefront after Trump ended the Obama-era deferred action on childhood arrivals program, exposing the young immigrants to deportation. A federal court case has temporarily allowed the program to keep remaining or keep running. One Republican Representative Tom MacArthur of New Jersey said he likes the way the compromise bill handles young people because they're not getting in line in front of anyone else. That's fair. But he added, because those people can eventually apply for citizenship, they're not permanently sort of a second-class resident of America. Under the proposal, some 700,000 DACA recipients, that's the deferred action for childhood arrivals recipients, as well as a broader group of young people who didn't register for the program, could apply for legal status, which would be valid for 6 years and renewable indefinitely. Now, eventually, young people who are under 31 and have any chance and have been in the country since at least 2007 could begin to be awarded green cards based on a point system. It prioritizes education, such as English language proficiency, military service, continued employment, and after that they could apply for citizenship, as is the situation under the current law for those with permanent legal status. So that's the latest in the Washington area. And now we'll move on to more local and state news. In Bloomington Normal, we have a nurse pleads guilty in opioid patch theft. On the left-hand side of the page, we have James Rillian. On the right, he's talking with his attorney, Brandon Bukalski, Thursday in the McLean County Circuit Court after he pleaded guilty in connection with the theft of opioid patches from nursing home residents, and he will be sentenced on July 25th. The article reads that a Bloomington man accused of stealing opioid patches from terminally ill nursing home residents pleaded guilty Thursday to residential burglary. James Rillian, 31, agreed to the open plea deal that does not include a specific sentence. Judge Casey Costigan will make the decision on July 25th. Five other felony charges were dismissed in the plea agreement, and the deal requires Rillian to surrender his nursing license. He will be eligible for 4 to 15 years in prison, and he will be sentenced to adult court and probation services. Probation, a specialized community-based program for people whose offenses are tied to addiction and used as alternative sentence to prison or jail. Defense attorney Brandon Bulaski is expected to request probation at the sentencing hearing. The initial charges against Rillian detail two visits he made in February to the Bloomington Rehabilitation and Health Care Center and Heritage Health in Normal, and at the time he was employed as a nurse at the Bloomington facility, but was not on duty February 24th when he entered a residence room and took a pain patch from the resident living there, said police. 2 days later, Railhan allegedly went to the Normal nursing home where he previously worked and removed a patch from a terminally ill person there. Railhan denied allegations during his interviews with police following a review of surveillance video from that Bloomington nursing home and statements from workers in Normal who said they saw him in the building. But in recordings of jail phone calls between Railhan and an unidentified person, he admitted taking the pain patches, according to a statement given to the judge by Assistant State's Attorney Jeff Hover. And next we move on to $1 million bond for a man charged in a homicide. Bond has been set at $1 million on Thursday for a Rantoul man charged in connection with the alleged drug-induced homicide of another man in McLean County. Troy D. McBride, 24, was indicted June 8th by a statewide grand jury in Lee County. The seven-count indictment charges McBride with delivery of the drugs that caused the death of James Dingman of Bloomington, 41. After a bond hearing Thursday, Assistant State's Attorney Jeff Horvitz said heroin and fentanyl were the drugs that caused Dingman's death. Drugs were found at the scene where he died, said the prosecutor, and additional details were not discussed at the hearing. Let's see, we're going to continue here. The accused, Mr. McBride, is employed at a Rantoul factory and was arrested Wednesday in Urbana by Bloomington Police Department Vice and Street Crimes Units and Champaign County Street Crimes Task Force. McLean County Associate Judge Amy McFarland denied a request from McLean County Public Defender to lower McBride's bond that requires him to post $100,000 to be released. According to Horver, a member of the victim's family may want to provide a victim impact statement if a hearing is held on the issue of bond. The judge approved a request from the state that requires McBride to prove that the source of any bond he posts is from a legitimate source. The McLean County State's Attorney's Office assisted in the investigation that began in March 23rd when McBride was pulled over for a traffic stop in Urbana, said the Bloomington police statement. And McBride also was indicted on six counts related to the manufacture, delivery of controlled substances. BPD jointly investigated the case with Champaign police, who recovered heroin, fentanyl, and crack cocaine during the initial traffic stop, said the BPD. Drug charges were dismissed in Champaign County Thursday after the McLean County case was filed against McBride, said Hover. The felony arrest is the second drug-induced homicide case filed in McLean County since 2016. The arrest prompted BPD to include a message that if anyone knows of someone who is battling drug addiction, they should contact local treatment agencies at 309-827-6026 or 309-888-0993. This is a direct appeal from the police department. And on that note, we will go close this session of the Pantograph for Friday, June 15th, 2018. And I'm going to take a short break, and you will hear the second half hour of the Pantograph. So please stay tuned and have a great weekend.